Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of this incredible wide universe that we live in. And tonight we have a very special guest. Her name is Diana Harris, and we're going to be talking about animal wisdom. But before we get into that, I would like to remind people about our show last week, which was Dream Channeling with Jenny Vaught. It was very, very interesting. She had a lot of very interesting stories to tell, and I really enjoyed speaking with her. So if you didn't get a chance to catch the show, it is on archives, as are all the episodes. And tonight is actually a really special episode. It's our 100th episode. So I'm really, really excited about that. We've been on for 2 years now, and I'm just really happy to finally have reached this milestone. And so I'm really excited to bring on this extra special guest tonight, Diana Harris. And as I said, we're going to be talking about animal wisdom. Now, our guest, Diana Harris, is an intuitive counselor, a psychic medium, and a workshop facilitator. And she was actually born an empath, as I read on her webpage. From an early age, she was drawn to Edgar Cayce, mysticism, shamanism, Eastern philosophies, and other esoteric doctrines. However, it wasn't until the age of 30, while living in Hawaii, that she heard the beckoning of her soul and followed her true calling, which was this very incredible work that she's doing right now. And which was amazing, because at the time she was working as a communications engineer. But after a bunch of synchronicities and teachers began to appear, Diana knew what she had to do and followed her true calling. And the earth-based spirituality of Native American teachings and Hawaiian huna have been the primary focus of her spiritual path. But she has also garnered national attention with both her work on animal totems and archetypes and her intuitive abilities. And tonight, we are so honored because she will share with us her work and experiences and knowledge in this realm of animal archetypes, which you don't hear a lot about. There's not a lot of people who study this stuff. So we're going to discuss the amazing wisdom of our animal brothers and sisters, how animal totems influence our lives, and how to work with their physical and spiritual energies and receive their messages. So for all you listeners out there, remember, this is a call-in show, and so I'm going to give out the toll-free number, and feel free to call in at any time, because we'd love to hear from you. Here's the number right now, so grab your pen. It's 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that again. It's 888-228-4494. But so this subject, I'm just so excited to talk about, because I know a lot of people know how much influence animals have in our lives. I mean, we have everything from eye-seeing dogs, cancer-sniffing dogs, canaries in the coal mine. I mean, animals have had a profound influence on our lives. But Diana's really important research, I think, shows that it's much more profound than most people think. So I'm really, really excited and honored to have her on the show. Diana, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Preston.
I'm really excited. And this is a pretty rare topic. Like I said, there's not really a lot of people who know a lot about this, and yet it has such a profound influence on our lives.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Animals are basically our teachers. They are. Earth was created as a classroom for humanity.
Wow.
Definitely. Earth was created as a classroom for humanity, or for the souls that have chosen to incarnate here on Earth. Earth, the plants, the rocks, and our animal brothers and sisters basically are teachers. So simply put, God wouldn't have appeared without tools. And there was a time when our ancestors knew that Ichir and humanity was one. And animals and humanity lived in balance with each other. You know, it's very humbling today because we have skyscrapers, technology, and all of this. And we see ourselves as masters, and we're not. We're equals. And in actuality, all of us here on Earth, and even our ancestors, we all took a soul vow. And that soul vow was to be a steward of Mother Earth. And it doesn't feel, at least to a lot of us, that we are actually stewarding Mother Earth because we think that we're smarter than her.
Right.
We're better than her. And we're not. She sacrificed her soul. She sacrificed herself to teach us something. She's a soul, a living entity, just like we are. A lot of people may not even believe that animals have souls, but they do. Every living thing has souls. Trees have souls. Rocks have souls. Every living entity on Earth has a soul. And I think that we've forgotten that. Our ancestors knew that.
Right.
Most particularly, the shamans knew that. But the shamans were the teachers of their particular communities, their particular cultures, their particular tribes. The people honored that wisdom.
It's interesting, Crystal.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, what you're saying is very interesting because there's cultures throughout the world, you know, particularly in the past, have paid much more attention to, I think, to animals and were able to have a much better relationship with them. I mean, I'm thinking of, like, Egypt and how they worshipped cats.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But the thing is, let's bring it home. I'm going to give you some animals, and you're going to understand that all of us understand the symbolism of animals. Look at our money.
Right.
What bird is on our money? What bird is on our seal, the presidential seal?
The eagle.
And what does it say? It says, in God we trust.
Right.
And eagle represents, to most Native American cultures, Great Spirit would be God. Do you think that was that we thought of that? Intuitively, humanity knows that we're connected to nature, but our mind tells us that we're superior to nature. With our hearts, we know that we aren't. I mean, you were talking about Seth, and she's that goddess of Egypt. But look at Christianity. When I say dove, do you peace?
Of course, right.
So, you know, people think that it's only for Native Americans or for Druids or for Africans or Mayans or Aztecs or Hawaiians, but we do it ourselves. Look how many ball teams. I'm not a real sports fan, but look how many ball teams have animal names. How about the bull?
Right.
Yeah. So why we call on animals? We're intuitively or naturally, instinctively asking that medicine, which is not really medicine, but it's a gift and a lesson, or the gifts and the attributes of that particular animal, or the spirit of that animal, or the manitou of that animal to be our ally. Or mascot, not really our mascot, but our ally. So the bull, that tells you something about the Chicago Bulls.
All right. Well, no.
Okay. They call themselves the Rams.
And all the different cars that are named after animals as well, like, you know,
absolutely,
the Mustang. And...
Right. And horses.
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting, too, because I was thinking about horses. And is the animal that sacrificed, it, which means that I allowed myself to be domesticated, I sacrificed myself so that man could fly.
Huh.
So, almost honor of that, we say horsepower in our cars. What's the horsepower of your vehicle? But we know that horses' ability to travel faster, which was like flying us before we were walking.
Right. How interesting this is. You know, another thing that's coming to my mind is in the Buddhist culture, when people are trying to do the Yoga Sutras, and they meditate on various aspects to gain the siddhis, they're called, or supernatural powers. One of the supernatural powers that are natural to all enlightened human beings is supernatural strength. And the way to obtain this particular talent is to meditate on the power of an elephant. That's what the sutra says. You meditate on the strength of an elephant. So it's exactly what you're saying. Here it is in another culture. They're taking on this animal's Manitou.
Do you want to talk about elephants for a little bit?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So there is a god called Ganesh.
Right.
And Ganesh, known as the remover of obstacles, and he is the elephant-headed deity. But the elephant itself is not even aware of its strength. And that's what willpower is, because it's very large, but the way it moves is very, very graceful. So elephant teaches us something about what real power is. Real power is held softly.
Wow.
Okay?
Right.
Elephants teach us grace. It teaches us to move with our inner nobility, which would be our heart.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yes. And they are also wisdom keepers. They know when to stampede.
That's true. Well, elephants do have that reputation for having excellent memories as well, so that would make sense.
Wisdom keeper. Right.
And in fact, there was a book all about, you know, why elephants weep, and they discovered that they have very complex emotional lives.
Yes, they do. So. Yes, they do. Animals love.
Well, I know my dogs and cats, my former pets, had, you know, sometimes we catch them being where they weren't supposed to be, up on the, you know, sleeping on the couch or something, and they look up at you in their eyes, and they definitely had a guilty look to them, so they experienced
guilt.
They know
the difference between right and wrong, trust me. And you may think that I chose my pets because I went to a pet store or whatever, or I went to a shelter, or, you know, I received my pet from my Uncle Jimmy. But actually, our pets choose us. And a lot of the times, our pets are our soulmates. And I'm not talking the way that society has romanticized soulmates. Soulmates are basically individuals or animals that we have chosen to have a particular experience with. It could be a completion of the lesson, or it could be a beginning of a new lesson and opportunity. So our animals actually choose us.
Wow. It's very interesting. Well, of course, in lots of people's pets, you know, people and their pets sort of begin to take on a lot of the same mannerisms and the same appearance as well. And even illnesses, I heard there was a study about that, where pets actually help people with their physical illnesses.
Yeah, they will definitely help people with their physical illnesses. Some of the animals that I have worked with have actually taken on some of the symptoms of the person that was their owner.
Wow.
In an attempt to alleviate the burden of that illness.
Right.
That their owner, the pet owner, is manifesting.
Well, it seems like dogs and cats have probably the most profound influence on people's lives. I mean, like, there's an Irish legend about black dogs. I think it's in Ireland where if a black dog comes around, that signals a death in the family.
Someone's going to cross part of that.
Or a bird flying in the room. I think that's in another culture. That's so animals have all sorts of messages for us, don't they, is what you're saying.
They absolutely do. Absolutely do. Dogs teach us to be loyal to our heart. They teach us unconditional love.
Wow.
Yeah, they do. Because no matter what kind of day we have, love us conditionally. They greet us at the door. Doesn't matter what kind of mood we're in. And in many, many cultures, when the women of the village went out to work gardens or in the fields, the dogs were babysitters. And in some instances, those dogs were actually domesticated wolves.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were the watchers of the children.
Isn't that interesting? So animals are a lot more intelligent than we give them credit for.
Absolutely. But animals don't have they do have a mind, but they don't have, let's say, the ego to deal with. They follow their instincts. Most animals tell me that I live close to Mother Earth. I hear her heartbeat. You put yourselves in high buildings. You don't go outside. You don't commune with nature. Therefore, you've forgotten.
Right. And that's where most people spend most of their time, too, is, you know, in office buildings and in
office
cars.
Buildings.
And...
Yep.
So
if we want to reconnect to our true natures, it's best done outdoors.
I see. So how can people, you know, connect to their own animal totem? And do each people have their own particular totem? That, you know what I mean?
Yes, we do. Our animal totems, there are different types of animal totems, just as there are different types of guardian angels.
Okay.
And you can look in several books and they will tell you how to find your animal totem. And in actuality, your animal totem chooses you. It really does.
That would make sense.
Of course we would want the jaguar or the eagle or the, you know, no one wants a sloth. I've actually worked with people with mouse medicine, and they didn't like that their totem animal or one of their totem animals was a mouse. But once I gave them some information on what the gifts of mouse were, they were proud to have mouse as medicine. So our animal totems actually choose us, because our egos, you know, of course we would want the Cadillac of the animal.
Right.
Most definitely.
How can someone go about finding out what their animal totem is, and or how would they connect to it?
This is what I tell people, you know, since they are very... I will say you have a primary totem, like you have a primary guardian angel. I'm trying to make it very simple. You have primary totems. And then there's another grouping that I like to call a transitional totem.
Okay.
And that particular animal may show up in your life for no reason at all. And you may have experience with that particular animal 3 or 4 times. And then... if you can gather that animal's medicine, first thing is to notice occurring events with this particular animal. Gather that animal's medicine and ask it what it's trying to tell you or to teach you. Observe what the animal's doing. That's what I would tell someone. because it's probably quicker to notice the transitional animals. Because if all of a sudden you've never seen a hawk, you have five events where the hawk shows up, that would be a pretty good indicator. A hawk may be trying to tell you something, that something significant is going on in your life.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does, it does. It reminds me of an experience I had with black ravens. You know, people
okay.
see ravens, you know, every now and then, but there was this one period in my life for about a month where they were just all over me. They were pecking on my windowsill. And so,
oh, my goodness. They were trying to get in and get a message to you, Preston.
I certainly felt that way. And, you know, they're such a powerful-looking animal up close like that. You don't realize how big they really are. And they certainly do have a reputation as being very, you know, spiritual. So.
Most definitely. Raven is the color of black, and that's the color of what we would call the void. You know, I call it the cosmic womb. Some people call it the void. And black is a culmination of all of the colors together. In a lot of spiritual belief, they believe that Raven is actually the carrier of prayer medicine to heaven. So
oh, wow.
In some traditions, the medicine or the prayer is taken up with smoke, campfire. But Raven actually does mean answered prayer. Raven sometimes brings a message to those that it comes to, not to be afraid of the unknown, that your dream is going to come to fruition, and just to move in spite of.
Well, that would
so I don't know if you can go back to that particular period in your life, what you were thinking about, what you were dreaming about, what you were processing through, but just with what I told you, just think about it.
Right. No, that does make sense. It's
okay.
Very interesting.
Because birds are always messengers, and each particular bird would mean something. But Raven is about answered prayer. We don't have to ask over and over and over again. It's basically heaven's way of saying, I heard you. Now we're asking you to be a co-creator and to trust.
Right.
Yeah.
Very. Yeah. Well, I heard the hummingbird was also a very powerful messenger.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hummingbird teaches us to... Each of the animals that I work with have over 50 meanings. It's an individual. When I'm speaking with someone or working with someone, I know what that animal's medicine is for that particular person. So I'll give you some general clues about hummingbirds. Hummingbird, the colors aren't visible without sunlight. The wings are almost iridescent. In the sunlight, like the colors of the rainbow. So very simplistically, hummingbird reminds us to honor all of the colors of nature, to honor all of our colors, which would be our gifts, and to honor also our light and shadow. Most of us like to claim the good parts of ourselves, but we bury or do not address the shadow aspects of ourselves. And hummingbird is a reminder that all colors are beautiful. Once you acknowledge shadow, it can become light. So the shadow part of ourselves, that those key behaviors that we may not particularly like about ourselves, or those habits that we find very, very hard to break, are just parts of ourselves want to come to light.
Right.
So hummingbird is a reminder of that, not to judge ourselves. And every time someone sees a hummingbird, what do? You smile correctly, right?
Right.
When you see a hummingbird, it's always a surprise. So hummingbird reminds us that life is very, very short and that we should drink very deeply from its cup and share that love as much as we possibly can, because that's what we came here to do, is
wow.
to share that love.
So is every single animal has, what about giraffes? Would that be something that would have wisdom to
I love that? Giraffes. I love giraffes. Okay. So giraffes are what? Tall, right?
Right,
Very, 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 very tall. Long neck, correct?
Right, right.
Their skin is it is camouflage, correct?
Absolutely.
So one of the gifts of giraffes would be the ability to blend in with one's surroundings. And with the gift of the long neck and to be able to blend in with the trees, it has the gift of what? Sight.
Right.
Far reaching. So giraffes have the ability to see in the distance. So you can say foresight. And also they have the two little horns at the top of their head. And that's very symbolic as well. Because I would call those antennas to heaven. So for us, we don't have antennas to heaven as in antlers or anything like that. But that's also for sanity, representative of our crown chakra. And the crown chakra is in the baby's, you know, the top of our head, the baby soft spot. And that's our umbilical cord to heaven. So giraffe reminds us, though we are living here on earth, we are divine.
Wow.
So giraffe reminds of our divinity. It reminds us to stay flexible. Reminds us to stay above the fray and to look and keep our eyes and our hearts focused on our dreams. And it's also very, very, very fast.
That's true.
So we can sense and it has the ability to escape from that danger.
How interesting. I know it has the largest heart of all the mammals, of all the
land
mammals.
Yeah, they're very creatures. They're very, very gentle creatures and very beautiful.
Very
but the long neck would be grace and flexibility.
Well, Diana, this is just so interesting because you're kind of bringing a whole new awareness to the way, you know, I'm looking at animals and hopefully, you know, the people who are listening out there. I mean, like, lions and tigers, or they can represent courage, or cheetahs could represent speed. They're being the fastest animal on earth, or at least a land mammal. So it's very interesting. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs in the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Diana Harris, and we're talking about animal wisdom and you. And Diana, you have a website. Would you like to give out your website?
Sure. It's www.sacredspiraldance.com.
That's all one word, sacredspiraldance.com. Yeah, it's a beautiful website. Just you got lots of really cool stuff there. It's very, very nicely put together.
Thank you so much. And I want to share a little bit of how we can connect. Well, first I want to talk about animal spirits. There's no animal that is any better or any more spiritual than any other. And that's what I definitely want to say. Each animal, no matter how small or how large, has a power, and I call it medicine. And its power or medicine is based upon its unique survival skills, the qualities that it has, and the talents that it has. And we were talking about totem animals. We can have multiple totem animals. There's a belief system that we have 7 primary totem animals. And that,
wow.
And then that there are other ones that come into our lives to assist us through a particular journey or through a particular process. But typically, we do have 7 animals.
Well, that would make more sense because that way we can make use of all the different animals that are
absolutely
out there.
Yeah.
Gosh knows how many animals there are. I mean, there's scientists still haven't been able to figure out the exact number of species of animals. So
I've known humans that have had over 100 totem animals because they've learned to work with the medicine of that particular animal, and once they've mastered the medicine of that animal, then it becomes their permanent ally.
Wow.
There's no limiting. You know, in Christianity, we are taught to believe that we have one guardian angel, and that's not true. We can have multiple guardian angels, but then we have angels that come and work with us through particular processes in our lives. And that's the same as our animal totems. Actually, I'd like to really simplify it and say that animal totems are our earth angels.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. They are
They're here with us. And maybe it's our guardian angels that are talking to us through totem animals or the animals that we encounter on a day-to-day basis.
Right, right. I totally get what you're saying. I remember there was one time I was having a real hard time. I had been disappointed severely. And a red-tail hawk came and landed down right next to me and just looked right at me and lifted all of my, you know, sadness away. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. And you know, hawk, in some traditions, thought that hawk were symbols of angels. So I would call your experience a hello from heaven. Guardian angel, maybe you're one of your totem animals, I'm not sure. So the red-tailed hawk, the feathers of the red-tailed hawk represent kundalini energy. And that's our life force energy.
Wow.
And so it also represents creativity and manifesting our potential here on Earth. So that hawk probably came to remind you.
Yeah, it was a very powerful experience. And, you know, another time I was up in Big Bear, and a deer just came walking out of the forest and walked right up to me and stole my cookie right out of my hand.
Share those good things.
It was just a really surprising thing. I mean, every now and then I'll have wild animals walk right up to me. It's very strange.
Absolutely.
I've read about that. It's just a weird thing that happens to me sometimes.
And because they recognize the intent of the soul.
Right.
They recognize the intent of the soul. They know those of us that are harmless.
That's so beautiful.
This is told me the story of your hawk experience, because almost on a lark, I was going to send you a picture of, I call them my pets. I have two hawks. They're not my pets, but they come to visit often, and they're sitting on my back porch. And I was going to send the email, and the email was going to just say, my two pets. And it's a male and a female red-tailed hawk.
Isn't that beautiful? Wow.
Yeah, they are awesome. They're beautiful creatures. They're beautiful creatures. I learned a lot from them. And
so,
go ahead.
It's so interesting because, you know, not too long ago I read Butler's Lives of the Saints, which is, you know, basically a history of all the Christian saints throughout. But really long book, actually. It's four volumes and some thousands of pages. But it was really interesting because some of these people, some of these saints, had this ability to tame wild animals. And they said wild animals of all types would come up around them, and they were able to chase packs of mad dogs away, and just had this amazing ability to communicate with animals.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we see some of that today, you know, with, like, the dog whisperer, and that's a television show.
This is always done this. Shamans have actually been able to, or certain levels of shamans have actually been able to shapeshift. There were many, many, many shapeshifters. And they were able to become one with the spirit of the condor or the thunderbird or Mustang or the eagle or the weasel. You know, it's interesting. I have been doing a lot of research many, many years ago, and Merlin was actually a master shapeshifter. He wasn't a shaman, but he definitely was a seer.
Wow.
He was a master shapeshifter, because when he wanted to get in and out of court unknown or unnoticed, shapeshift into a fox.
Oh, interesting. Well, what about, like, the bat? that has this reputation with vampires. Is what would you say the whole symbolism of, you know, bats?
A bat? Yeah. Bat actually is a symbol of rebirth, regeneration. I like bats. In the area where I live, I could sit out on my balcony and I could see bats flying by.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Bats teach us something about intuition, because people say blind as a bat, but bats don't need to see. You know why they don't need to see?
They have radar, don't they?
Yeah, the sonar.
Sonar.
The sound waves. They know where everything is by the radio frequency or the sonar. So they don't need to see with their eyes. They could see with the emanating of the radio waves. So there's no such thing as blind as a bat, because you don't see bats running into trees.
That's true.
Definitely. And bats eat mosquitoes, so they actually help to balance the ecology, to balance nature. But when bats rest, they hang upside down in a position of total surrender and trust. Have you ever looked at a tarot deck?
I'm sure.
Have you ever seen and have you seen the hangman?
Yeah.
And he is upside down like a bat, and there's a very peaceful, serene smile on his face.
Huh. Interesting.
The bat. Bat energy. Bat medicine. I trust that all that is mine will come to me. I trust the process of life, birth, and rebirth. And that's what that represents.
Well, it's interesting, because Batman is like one of the biggest movies now of all times.
I love that movie. Oh, yeah. And most people are afraid of the dark. And when do bats fly?
Only
mostly
at
night. Right.
Interesting.
Definitely.
So, what about, like, the cockroach or, you know, bugs?
Bugs? Depends on the bug. We need to find the saving grace in the cockroach, but we know there is one. They have their whole system. I've never communicated with a cockroach, so I'm going to have to think about that. Never. No one's ever asked me about cockroach before. People have asked me about, like, ladybug, mosquito, grasshopper, spider, but never cockroach. I will have to think. Let me ask them. Let me see. Something about teaching us longevity.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know how long they live, but he said something about teaching us longevity.
Well, they're a very, very old species.
Okay.
They've been around a long, long time. And they're known for surviving, you know.
And that might be what they teach, survival skills, because if we don't have survival skills, then we wouldn't have longevity. But they're talking to me about longevity and time. He's also showing me water. He says that we should keep our waters clean.
That's definitely something I'm worried about in today's world.
He's talking about, he's not talking about himself. He's talking about keeping our waters clean. He's talking about pollution. He's talking about chemicals in the water.
Wow.
You know that they can fly as well. They can fly for short distances as well.
Right.
He's talking about something about growth spurts. If you really wanted to know more about cockroach, this is what I would do. I would study the life cycle, how long it takes the eggs to hatch, how it adapts, what climates it thrives best in, what its natural enemies are. And that's what I would tell anyone. To understand an animal, or to understand your animal totem, to study the animal's habitat, know its power cycles, to know what its natural enemies are, know what environments, what animals that it can live in peace with.
Right.
This is letting that animal know that you respect it enough to work with its energy. It's just like you wouldn't call someone a friend without getting to know them, correct?
Exactly.
And without, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, correct?
Right.
So our animal totems, they want us to know that in order to work with their abilities and to work with our own abilities, they want to see that we want to meet them halfway. You understand?
Sure, yeah.
So if there are a lot of animals. Someone had asked me something about a scorpion. I'm like, I've never talked to a scorpion before. And I was eight, and I, give me a minute. And so I talked to scorpion, and scorpion gave me a message for that particular person that had asked me a question. And I told her, I said, if you want to learn more about scorpion, these are four questions, and this is homework for you. And this is going to tell you more about scorpion medicine. And the colors of an animal is going to tell you something about its gifts and attributes as well. And roach is still here. It said something about it's like armor that they wear.
Right.
So would tell me something about boundaries, healthy boundaries. So there's a lesson from roach that would say something about healthy boundaries. Because I see the hard shell, it looks shiny to me.
Right.
And he says, my armor. So roaches teach us things about having healthy boundaries.
All right. So I guess the longer you meditate on any particular animal, the more messages and more meaning you can get out of it.
Absolutely. Because I would never attribute any of that to a cockroach.
Right. No, dolphins and porpoises and whales and they're often thought of as being just as intelligent as us. Or and I know that they have, you know, parts of they have additional brain matter that we don't even have. Dolphins do.
Absolutely.
And I have this friend of mine, and she every time she goes out to the ocean, she says she can call dolphins, and sure enough, she does. The dolphins always arrive.
Oh, yeah.
She says she's able to communicate telepathically with them.
You call them. I was in North Carolina, and I was out on a fishing dock, and all the way to the, walking out to the fishing dock, I'm like, I told them, I'm coming, show up, I'm coming, I'm on my way, I'm coming. About 10 to 12 dolphins showed up. Right off the edge of the dock. The fishermen weren't too happy.
Well, it's really interesting because dolphins have a really close relationship with a lot of humans. I mean, they've saved many human beings' lives who were drowning. There's lots of stories about that.
Absolutely. Remember the story that used to be on television called Flipper?
Of course I do.
Remember Flipper?
Yeah, I watched that show.
Oh, yeah, I was in love with Flipper when I was a child. I was in love with Flipper. And I realized why later on. But I was, like, totally in love with Flipper. Not as in the romantic kind of love, but just in love with, I don't know what it was, just the energy. Dolphins and whales are here to hold a certain vibration here on Earth. Grandmother whale, grandfather whale, it's the whale song that actually still hold the platelets of the Earth together.
Right, wow.
So, think it's just them chit-chatting, trying to figure out where the rest of the community is, and it's that song, it's that music, it's that tone that helps keep the platelets of the Earth together.
That's
and Grandmother Whale is also a wisdom keeper. Most definitely. And whale and dolphin come from the stars. You might be interested in that.
Right. There is a UFO connection to the...
Sirius.
Somehow.
They come from the dog star Sirius.
Oh, how interesting.
Yep. There's an African legend from the Dogon tribe that is true. Anthropologists and several scientists had gone to investigate the Dogon tribe. And they noticed that the tribe didn't have written records of anything. They said, our wisdom is passed word of mouth. And I guess they visited some of the pyramids or the tombs, and there were these beings with humanoid faces, but look like dolphin fins. And they said, let us tell you about that. And so the wisdom keepers, the elders, educated these scientists and archaeologists, et cetera, and they said, yes, you know, our ancestors have told this story over and over and over again, that we were visited by a ship of light, a light ship, and it hovered above our nation, and it shot down something liquid, which was water, and down a tube of light, these beings, these humanoid beings with tails of dolphins, gathered in the water, and they taught us the sciences, and we have much to tell you. There's another dog star Sirius. And all of those people were like, that's impossible, that cannot be true. You know, we have the telescopes, we have the technology. And then what, 1974, we discovered that it was true?
Wow.
They taught them the science.
Yeah, I have heard of this, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And they also brought the sciences to Egypt and Mesopotamia and Babylon.
Right.
Just
like...
And so dolphins and whales are descendants of those beings from the stars. And their job is to hold a particular vibration for Mother Earth, so that she can heal and so she too can rise. The energy of dolphin, of course, is going to be fifth dimension, unconditional love.
Wow.
If you put, and dolphins are, we were talking about healing and how animals interact in our lives, and there are a lot of, they're putting, people with particular physical challenges in the water with dolphins, and being in the water with the vibration of the dolphin is actually facilitating those persons' healing.
Yeah, this is actually, yeah, I have seen shows on this. It helps autistic children and all kinds of illnesses.
Absolutely. And it's because the dolphin's neurological system speaks to the neurological system of the child, or even the water with it. And those two systems understand each other. We don't need language. and every human being can recognize the vibration of love.
Right.
And it's love that helps to heal, love that does heal.
Absolutely. So do you think it's important that people move towards becoming vegetarians?
I think it depends on the person's body type, and I think it's part of the soul agreement. I mean, there are people coming into the world, there are children that I know that are repulsed by eating meat, because meat does lower the vibration, but there are some of us still that require that particular type of protein. So I am not making a judgment either way. There are other ways to get protein. But I think a lot of the new children coming in don't like meat, and we try to give them meat. But there's a reason that they don't like meat, and it's because they're resonating at a higher frequency than we are. And they know intuitively that that meat would burden them down. And then you also have to remember, if animals have souls and that we are killing them in a non-compassionate way, then we are also ingesting the animal's pain. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does.
We're ingesting the animal's pain. And if I would go back to indigenous cultures or talking about indigenous cultures, the reason that humanity and nature live so well together is that we only took from nature what we needed. We didn't take to acquire. When Native Americans or any other indigenous group would go into the forest or into the jungle, they would go and they would talk to the trees, and they would ask the trees which ones are willing to sacrifice themselves because they have to build shelter for their family. Where they have to build a boat so they can go fishing. But they gave honor and they paid homage to the trees that they cut. They didn't cut them just to cut them. They didn't kill the animals for sport. They asked the animals which of them they were willing to sacrifice. And those animals willingly gave themselves and they ingested meat. That's not what we do these days.
No, it certainly isn't.
Random acts of unconsciousness. But we have to understand anything that we eat, we're absorbing the consciousness of.
Wow.
Yes. Energy is energy. It doesn't die. It just moves on.
Well, if you bless your food, kind of, and is it possible to, you know, improve that, the quality of that vibration?
Yes, I thank my food for sacrificing itself to nurture me.
Right. That's very interesting. Well, you know what, Diana, we're approaching the end of the hour. We still have a few minutes left, though. I just wanted everyone to hear again what your website is. It's a
sacredspiraldance.com.
www.sacredspiraldance.com. And we still have a few minutes. Do you have any last messages you'd like to give out to our listeners about, you know, how they can connect with their animal totems, or, you know, what you think they should know about?
I would tell them, pay attention, because nature and heaven are always sending us signals. The universe usually speaks to us in a language that we understand. So if you live in an area and all of a sudden you see a lot of activities, fox, or you see deer you know they're deer, but you haven't really, really had an up-close encounter with a deer or wild turkey or otter or beaver or whatever is part of your natural habitat, just stop and take note. Kind of close your eyes and ask universe or ask that animal, what message is it trying to give you? Like a bird pecking on the window or a squirrel pecking on the window or a hawk flying parallel to your car or swooping in front of you, that's definitely nature trying to get your attention.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, I teach a course on animal wisdom, and it's typically a 4-week course, sometimes a 6-week course. We go into the various realms of animals, and we talk about the aquatic animals, the air animals, the mammals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we talk probably about 100 different animals. But even at the end of that 4 or 6 week course, still tell people that we've only touched upon the beginning, because after you start speaking with the animal or sitting, not so much speaking, but sitting with the energy of the animal, even to go on the internet and to get a picture with it, of it, and hold a picture of it, is a way of to bond with the animal, to look on what National Geographic, or to study the animal's habitats, is a way of learning the strengths and the challenges and the gifts of that particular animal. The more and more that you do this, the more and more you open up. If animals come to you, they're trying to tell you something about yourself. But there's nothing in this world that's by chance.
Right.
Nothing. And
wow.
That's the only thing I can say simplistically within an hour time frame. Nothing in this world is by chance. If you have an encounter with a blue jay, it's not us looking for it, it's the animal finding us. But it's just us being awake enough to notice it.
Wow. Well, Diana, that's pretty much our time tonight. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. You're amazing. You've got an amazing amount of knowledge on the subject, and it was just beautiful to hear.
Thank you so much. I wish you many more happy animal encounters.
Thank you very much. You too. All right, everyone. Well, that's our show. I hope you've enjoyed our guest tonight, Diana Harris. And we've been talking about animal wisdom and you. And if you want to learn more about Diana Harris and her amazing research, you have to go to her amazing website, Sacred Spiral Dance. It is all one word, www.sacredspiraldance.com. And it's a beautiful website, all full of different stories and different things that will definitely help us all along in our quest for spiritual enlightenment and a connection to our animal friends. Very interesting show. I want to thank Diana again so much for coming onto the show. And I hope you all can join us next week when I bring on another interesting guest to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye.